Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing, testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. This tape with Ron Berry, Chief of the Lunar Mission Analysis Branch, Manned Spacecraft Center. Mr. Berry, when you begin to plan a mission like Apollo 8, what's the first thing that you consider?
Okay. The anchor point in planning any lunar mission, as far as we're concerned, is a target location on the surface of the moon. In other words, a latitude and longitude on the surface of the moon, which we want to pass over on a certain revolution in lunar parking orbit.
Or on future missions to land on.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. This would be, of course, our end objective, is to pass over a certain landing point on the front side of the moon at which we want to land.
Now, how did this work for Apollo 8? What was your basic objective in beginning to plan for this mission?
The basic objective was to evaluate our certain navigational techniques, which we are planning on using for the landing mission. And the navigational techniques are comprised of a combination of our radar tracking from the Earth of our lunar orbits and landmark sightings and observations that the crew will actually make from the spacecraft while they're in lunar orbit prior to attempting a landing maneuver. And of course, these two pieces of information must be combined in real time in order to come up with a navigated state vector from which they can plan their landing maneuver in real time more exactly.
Well, now, where is this on the moon for Apollo 8?
Okay, for Apollo 8, our target locations are located or were chosen in the what's called the Apollo landing zone, ranging from about 45 degrees west longitude on the front side of the moon to 45 degrees east longitude, having a latitude variation of about plus or minus 5 degrees.
Right across the midsection, right?
Yes, right across the midsection of the front side of the moon, the side that's facing the Earth. Mm-hmm. This is called the Apollo landing zone. This is the zone that was photographed by the Lunar Orbiter series of flights, the Unmanned Lunar Orbiter series. And this is the area where we want to land in our landing missions next year. And I guess in answer to your question, what we wanted to do in Apollo 8 was to pick landing, or what we call pseudo-landing points, whereas not landing points that would actually be used in a landing mission, but landing points that are within this zone which have the correct lighting, the sun elevation, is at the time that we arrive in lunar orbit, such that we can practice our landmark observations that the crew will have to be making from the spacecraft at the same lighting angles that will be necessary for the lunar landing mission, to see if you can actually take landmark sightings at these very low sun elevations.
Very low. The sun is going to be just about 5 degrees above the horizon at that point.
At the time of the practice landmark sightings, the sun will be at 5 degrees. And these target locations were chosen on the front side of the moon such that when we, in the timeline in lunar orbit, when we wanted to take the landmark sightings, the sun would be at exactly 5 degrees above the horizon, coming over the crew's shoulder. Unless it would be like a rising sun as opposed to a setting sun.
Now, taking this objective as a known objective, how does your missions analysis branch help in planning the flight?
Okay. Well, our concerns are our constraints, or now our objectives in planning a lunar mission. First of all, the one I've already mentioned, lighting coupled with a specific target location on the front side of the moon. Now we also have to worry about vehicle or spacecraft performance requirements. In other words, we have to design a mission that's well within the fuel capability of our spacecraft to achieve those objectives. Mm-hmm. So we take the target point over the surface of the moon, and we optimize, in which we compute a fully optimized mission, which fuel-wise, which passes us over that site on the revolution in lunar orbit with which we want to take these sightings.
And then you figure backwards all the way to the time when you should launch in order to accomplish these things?
That's correct. It's essentially a backward type operation. We start with our anchor point on the front side of the moon and work our way backwards all the way to the Earth, optimizing as we go. And then there's a complete reoptimization of all of the maneuvers required at the end.
And that's the sort of planning which dictated the fact that we should launch Apollo 8 between December 21st and December 27th this year.
That is one of the major considerations. The other major consideration was that we have a daylight launch at the Cape. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened.
And a projected daylight landing in the Pacific 6 days later, too.
That's correct. It's a happy circumstance that when we get the correct lighting that we want in the Apollo landing zone for taking these landmark sightings, we also get daylight landings on our return. It just happens to come out like that. Nobody planned it, but we're very happy it did come out like that.
Thank you very much, Ron Berry, Chief of the Lunar Mission Analysis Branch at the Manned Spacecraft Center.
I want to do one takeout right there, and then we'll go on with
sure.
A little another. I think the next thing...
Mr. Berry, why are these mid-course corrections necessary in a flight to the moon?
The basic type of profile, trajectory profile, which we have chosen to fly for our lunar missions is called a free return type of trajectory. What I mean by free return is following the injection of the third stage of the launch vehicle together with the spacecraft from Earth parking orbit. Theoretically, if this maneuver were done perfectly, the spacecraft would be on a trajectory which would circumnavigate the moon, and if it decided not to go into lunar orbit, it would return to Earth and enter the entry corridor with no maneuvers being required.
That's the safe way of sending them that far and back.
That's correct. In other words, if the main propulsion unit in the spacecraft did not work to put the spacecraft into lunar orbit, the small attitude jets that they have on the spacecraft would be sufficient to guide them back into the entry corridor with no large maneuvers being required. Now, the reason any maneuvers are required at all is that this type of trajectory is extremely sensitive to small errors, even very tiny errors, at the initial injection point from the Earth's parking orbit.
That's at the time that the S-4B is sending them on the way to the moon.
Right. As an example of how sensitive this is, the accuracy required for this maneuver to keep them in the entry corridor would be approximately 0.005, that's 0.005 feet per second. This is an extremely small accuracy requirement, and when you consider that the total maneuver is on the order of 10,000 feet per second, in other words, that maneuver to send it around the moon is on the order of 10,000 feet per second in magnitude, and the accuracy requirement to really keep it within the return corridor is 0.005 feet per second. You can see it's unthinkable that a vehicle guidance system could be good enough to perform a maneuver to that degree of accuracy. Therefore, mid-courses are going to be required.
Mid-courses, just little touch-ups to refine this accuracy along the way.
That's correct. And the target objectives of these mid-course corrections will be to keep the spacecraft on this basic free return trajectory, such that if the main propulsion system does not operate to put the spacecraft into lunar orbit, then the attitude control system jets can be used to touch it up, tune it up, and bring it on into the entry corridor. But several of these mid-course corrections will be made just because of the high sensitivity of the trajectory.
Mm-hmm. Now, these can be done just about any time throughout that coasting period between the Earth and the Moon, can't they?
Yes, they could be done at any time. However, we plan to make them at times which are convenient in the crew work rest cycle. In other words, you would like to make the mid-course corrections when all of the crew members are awake. On this particular flight, Apollo 8, there will always be at least one crewman awake, but you would hate for him to start making a mid-course correction and firing the jets off and perhaps waking up the other two crew members and ruining their sleep. And the timing of the mid-courses aren't extremely critical. They can be juggled around to fit nicely into the crew work rest cycle so that they are made when all the crew members are awake. We presently plan on as many as 4 mid-course corrections on the leg of the trajectory from the Earth to the Moon, and approximately 3 to 4 on the return leg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Berry. Ron Berry, Lunar Mission Analysis Branch Chief at the Manned Spacecraft Center. Mr. Berry, when the spacecraft is now ready to come home, how does your mission analysis planning aid them in getting back to Earth?
Okay. We're involved in... For the return leg, we're involved in 2 different phases. First of all, we're responsible for what's known as targeting the trans-Earth injection maneuver. This is the maneuver which sends the spacecraft from the lunar orbit into the return trajectory back to Earth. And by targeting, I mean we compute what maneuver they should use, convert these into the appropriate guidance constants, and send them up to the spacecraft so that they can perform the maneuver. Then following this trans-Earth injection maneuver, we're also responsible for the trans-Earth mid-course corrections that will be required in order for the spacecraft to achieve the desired entry corridor. These are extremely important because they're so sensitive. We are trying to hit a extremely narrow entry corridor back at Earth at a very high velocity. The velocity at entry, of course, is approximately 36,000 feet per second, or something over 25,000 miles an hour. No.
Okay. I'll back this up. All right, go on.
And the width of the corridor, in terms of angles, it's only approximately 2 degrees wide. We're trying to come in at a very shallow angle relative to the local horizontal at that particular point.
If we may visualize it, could it be called a very narrow little cone?
That's correct, with the opening of the cone approximately 2 degrees wide. And this is a very...
How far out from the Earth would be the beginning of that cone?
Is when the spacecraft would encounter a measurable atmosphere, which is about 400,000 feet altitude above the surface of the Earth. Because this is such a very small corridor to hit, and because, again, we're on a very sensitive trajectory returning from the Moon, which requires very little perturbation one way or the other to cause significant shifts in the trajectory. This is what I would consider the most critical phase of the entire mission as far as accuracy and navigation and the whole works.
That reentry in the right slot.
That's correct. To give you some idea of the sensitivity of these trans-Earth mid-course corrections, at the first correction that would be performed, if an error is made of over 1 foot per second, it would cause, and no subsequent corrections were made, the vehicle would be outside of the entry corridor. Now, of course, what would happen in that event, the navigation would pick up that error later on as the spacecraft approached the Earth, and another subsequent correction would be made. But that would give you an idea of the sensitivity of the corrections.
But there are many backup methods to assure that we do hit that corridor, aren't there?
Yes, there is a... of course, the navigation is the main concern. We have the several many ground tracking stations tracking the vehicle returning from the moon, the data from which we're combining into a best estimate of the vehicle's trajectory path. Also, the spacecraft has an independent means of determining its own position and velocity through optical observations of the Earth's horizon and inertially fixed stars.
Thank you very much, Ron Berry, for explaining this to us. Ron Berry, Chief of Lunar Missions Analysis Branch at the Manned Spacecraft Center. This is Rhett Turner.